I know, I'm stronger, faster, better, right? But you left out one thing. I'm not a man anymore. I'm a freak.
The Freak Network at thefreaknetwork.com.
On today's Bill of the Flatus Show, episode 155, Divorcing Martha, Recorder Guy, Lady Day, and Dehydration. All of this and more. The Flatus Show, starring Kenty and Jose. Welcome to the Flatus Show. A low-calorie carbonated beverage for my diet. Oh, kids, that's delicious. A low-calorie carbonated beverage, and I'm your host, Kenty. And my co-host, Jose, is shopping at Bloomingdale's, so he won't be here today. Welcome, kids, to another week of the Flatus Show. I'm so glad you could come back. And or arrive for the first time. So this week, kids, has been pretty busy. More about that later. But not about anything specific. You'll see, honey. You'll see. And let's see what else is there. What else has happened this week? Well, I'm on the fifth season of Bewitched. Been watching that. I like it. I think it's getting better and better every year. I mean, season four was really good. That's the year that Samantha was the queen of the witches for the year. Started off that she was made queen of the witches, and she decided to take the job, but she would do it for 1 year. And they said that at the beginning. It's interesting, on the Wikipedia entry, the guy says, well, they say that Samantha's queen of the witches, but they don't say when she should stop being queen of the witch. And it's a lie, because it's right there in the beginning. Just watch the first episode or two, wherever she becomes queen of the witches, flayed us out of the mouth. And So that's that. Second season, she's Queen of the Witches. This year is a lot to do with Tabitha. There's a lot of Tabitha episodes in the fourth season, but Tabitha has a lot more exposure in the fifth season. And I think it's really, really good, you know? And you see more Uncle Arthur and Serena. So all these characters are coming out. You know, I still recall very few of these episodes, and I've watched now, what's 30 times 4, 120 episodes or more of Bewitched, and maybe 5 or 6 come back clearly to me that I've seen them before. I think it's the later ones, like season 6, 7, and 8 with the other Darren that I remember mostly, you know, that were mostly shown in rerun. But pardon me for that yawn. Like I said, I worked out today, so I'm a little bit on the tired side. Take off my hat, because I'm hot. I'm going to take a nap. It's 3 o'clock, and I'm supposed to have a show with Matt and them for Pocket Talk, so hopefully I'll be done by the time this is over. So anyway, this week I watched Bill Moyers on Friday night, and I thought it was really fabulous and really important. So watch Bill Moyers. He's on public TV. It's really good. I mean, I think he's nonpartisan, you know. I think he is safe to – I think he's good to watch, and you get good information. Now, he also had on some people about – the media, what's going on with, like, you know, I'm not going to mention her name, but, you know, all this spin about somebody, and it really has nothing to do with the issues. And actually, because the media is like a tornado, he said, it's like a hurricane. And there's so much information, it's like a hurricane of information. What do you take as true in this chaos, because you're getting it from all sides. You're getting it from TV. You're getting it from the papers. You're getting all sorts of information, even stories which aren't stories, spin stories. And, you know, something really interesting is a fellow podcaster works for a newspaper. I won't mention him by name, but, you know, people who listen to podcasts probably can figure out who it is. And he said, as an editor, that if he needs to fill his page, right, he has to have space. He has to fill up space in his paper for advertisers will, you know, continue to support them. He will find canned articles written by press agents online, right? So, you know, people have press agents and they write their script, right? Their story, so to speak. So let's say there's a rock star and he's going to go on a tour. Well, somebody will write a story. So all the facts are there. So all you have to do is have, you know, this, you know, paper, you know, take the information, take the photos and put it in your paper. Apparently, according to my fellow podcaster, most times is that the reporter will call the press agent and talk, try to get an interview with the star or whatever to get some, you know, to get some quotes so he can fill it in and make it look like it's a real article. But, you know, I heard the same thing. They do it on news, right? And what happens is that news people, like, you have these stories, you know, you might see them, like, you know, they'll say, now we're going to talk about this new treatment at a hospital. And, you know, it will look like a reporter is talking to a doctor and, you know, talking about this treatment or whatever. And you find out that it's not true. You know, the reporter didn't do it. It was canned, you know. And I remember working at the music store, we would get CD promos of interviews, you know. This is for an interview for a rock star, right? And what they do is that the rock star answers the questions, but then what happens is you have somebody asking the question, then they play the part where the rock star answers. So they're not even in the same, they're not around. They record it and, you know, you can't, you know. It's all fake. So anyway, what I'm saying is that we all know it's fake, right? You can't trust anything. So who are you to trust? Well, I trust Annenberg. I trust the name Annenberg, maybe because I went to Temple University and there's the Annenberg School of Communications. But there is Annenberg. Annenberg is, I don't know how they're related to this, but factcheck.org. Factcheck.org is a nonpartisan organization which checks the facts for a politician. So when politicians say something, factcheck.org gets to the dirt nitty-gritty and tells you whether it's true or false. And with these, there's a lot of allegations around a certain vice presidential candidate, and a lot of it is spin, a lot of it is not true, and also where the information is coming from is not true, okay? Apparently, people are saying, well, it's the opposite political party doing this, and it's not. So it's probably themselves doing it. But beware, you know, read, I would say, check your facts. Check, go to factcheck.org and check your facts so you can make a solid, decision, right? And if you don't trust factcheck.org, look at some other ones. You know, check out – I'm sure there's different websites that have fact-checking. Try to look for nonpartisan. And then if you, you know, try to figure it out yourself. I mean, I don't know what to say. I know my fundamentalist listeners will be like, I just follow the Bible. If it sounds like what the Bible says is true, then it's true. Well, that's all fine and dandy for you. So you go ahead and do that because, you know, nothing's going to change your mind. But – you know, that's really stupid. And I really do mean that. So let's see. What else do I have to say? Is a snake. I was going to the gym today, as I said earlier. And I turned the corner to go down the walk, and there was a snake. And it slithered away into the pack of sandra and into the stone wall. I was really amazed. So there was a snake. Also, Johnny and I finished the first season of Damages, and we can't wait for the second season. And we're now watching Dexter season 2. Actually, both of them are kind of ridiculous shows, both Damages and Dexter. Unbelievable. I mean, it's just, I don't know. It's fun, you know, but I don't know. I don't know what to say. Hello?
Pompeii was really covered in jizz. That's why they all died, Kenji? Oh, my God. Dude, you, like, totally know all the real history. It's Ouija. Hey, so was that a crack about the whole big gay sex show news thing with Wanda Wisdom? Was that a crack, man? Well, I don't feel bad. We cracked on you on the latest feedback show, which I'm hoping we can figure out a good way to clean out those feedback crap. So anyways, but oh my gosh, ADD. So I just wanted to say that, yes, you are the king of the homosexual agenda, so you need to keep it going. And I really appreciated you guys, like, doing the talk about weights and all that fun stuff. I'd like to add to your conversation. On my last set of reps, I always, like, push it to muscle failure. And we're pretty close to muscle failure, so I don't look stupid when everything comes crashing down. But, yeah, so that's kind of like a little something extra I do. And then also, I found a marked weight loss once I started, you know, implementing the abs, too. Because at first I kind of thought the abs, you know, doing those was only worth a damn when you had, you know, a little tight tummy. But actually I've learned, too, that just like the, you know, thighs, it's another major muscle group. And burns calories like it's nobody's business, because I've noticed a marked weight loss. So, and you were asking what the flag means to me. Okay, well, to your listeners. And I happen to be one of your listeners. One of your regular listeners, you need to perk every now and then, and that's why I do listen to your show. But what the flag means to me, I'd have to say confusion, discord, and like a band-aid, like barely holding the states together. So, yeah, I guess that's it. I mean, it sounds horribly un-American of me, but looking at it, and I am looking at it right now, flying over the California state flag, because I am here in front of the capital of California, because my office is across the street for the most part. All right, so anyways, big huggy, big kissy, and I love my Kinji. Bye-bye.
Bye. Talk to you later. Thank you, Ouija. Thank you for calling. And let's start with this. Okay, did I make a crack at the big gay sex show? No, I didn't, honey. When I said that, I really was thinking the big... I know Wanda has the big gay news, and it just came out big gay sex news. Because I listen to the Big Gay Sex Show, and I also listen to Big Gay News, and so it's like big and gay, right? Big and gay, and also show and news. You know what? It doesn't make a difference. It's really, if you think about it, advertisement for your show about naughty, naughty, naughty things that gay men do, and for Wanda Wisdom's show, Big Gay News. So, you know, it wasn't a crack. And why would you think that? Kenty loves you. Aren't I kind? Aren't I nice? Let me get some more low-calorie carbonated beverage. There's Johnny making tea. Working out your last two reps, your last reps, you go to muscle failure. That's very good. I think it's called forced reps. When you're going to the very tippy top at the end. Another thing is once you get to that end, right? And you can't, you know, you do your last rep, wait a minute or two, and then do a couple more. But you really need to have a buddy around to help you with that. But they're called forced reps. But anyway, yeah, that's very good. Go to muscle failure, because you do want to tire out the muscles. Ab exercises are my least favorite exercises to do. My favorite exercises are legs. Sorry. And now back exercises. They're my two favorite. I need to work on my shoulders because I'm looking at pictures about shoulders, and I need to make my shoulders bigger. And so I need to look into shoulder exercises to make sure I'm actually doing the right exercises. But that's all about me. Maybe I'll use Wanda Wisdom's shoulder exercise program for that, to get big shoulders. And now, last but not least, he tells me what the flag means to him. And I want to thank all my listeners who have called, all two, to tell me what the flag means to them. So please, if you're a listener, tell me what the flag means to you, and I'll put it on the show. And if I get a bunch of responses together, I'll string them together. But I think it's really interesting. Ouija says it means confusion, discord, and like a Band-Aid holding the states together. That's pretty, sad, view of the United States. I know that there's a lot of contention between in the states, seemingly, but I think it's not as bad as you think. I think it's a lot of spin, making it seem like there's the red states and the blue states. You need to stop watching the evening news, Ouija. And, try to broaden out your where you're getting your information. But I'm just guessing it's because of the media. I don't think that the United States is in bad shape. But you know what? If people believe that, then we are in bad shape. So it's actually a bad sign, Ouija, that you feel this way. You're not bad, but the fact that you feel this way indicates that to me that there are other people who feel this way. And that's not good, because that's not what America is about. America, what do I think about America? What do I think about the flag? Well, I said, the military or whatever. But, we are the land of the free. And we are not the land of the, we're not the land of civil war. I mean, we did have a civil war. And I suppose, you're never going to get put that behind you, but we have to remember that this country is one country, and it is a country for freedom and liberty and justice for all, and we can't forget that. We can't forget what the Constitution means, where we come from, and when people say lies, you have to confront them. So it's important that citizens that we know what American history is, we know how to analyze it, we know what the United States means. And so when people confront us and tell us, it's a biblical thing and, this, that, and the other thing, that's because they're dominionists who have been homeschooled and they don't know shit from Shinola, as my one of my aunts would say. And it's wrong. Basically, it's wrong. So on that note, on with the show. Lash. That's Brenda Starr you hear, finishing up her scoop just for you. Brenda Starr. Hi, kids. It's Brenda Starr update. Let's just give you a list of the people involved in the current Brenda Starr. There's Aurora, a mysterious woman, Bentley Price, Trad, Sage, Basil St. John's son, from Wanda, his wife Wanda, and of course Brenda Starr. So let's see here. Just to let you know, it's Aurora who's paying Bentley Price, who's paying Trad. Aurora has called Bentley Price to find out where the shipment is. She wants him to find Trad, and she also wants to avoid having that Star woman getting in touch with Basil because it could cause trouble. What does that mean? And what is the shipment? So apparently, Brenda Starr and Sage is not the shipment and has nothing to do with Basil. Well, it has something to do with Basil, but we don't know. So as you know, Brenda and Sage missing because Trad has gone AWOL and he sabotaged their cell phone and bikes, or have traveled out on the desert on their own. So they're traveling and traveling and traveling. It's getting hotter and hotter. They're sweating profusely when they come upon an outcropping of rocks with their shade. And they lie down in the shade. So while they're resting there, Sage sees the snake, and he is excited. He says, cool, and he goes up to look at the snake, and the snake bites him. So Brenda has to carry Sage. We don't know anything about the snake, whether it's poisonous or not, but Brenda's carrying Sage across the desert. You can see that she's sweating profusely, like cups and cups of water running down her face. And she collapses. She collapses. Is that right? And Sage yells for his father, "Father! Father!" And so somewhere, Basil hears the Sage's cry, and he goes, "Tango," or "Ringo," whatever his name is. Ringo, there's another guy, Ringo. Ringo is Basil's companion. "Ringo, did you hear that?" And Ringo's like, "I don't know, master, you're crazy." You know, when I say master, I don't mean like a slave-master relationship, or, you know, Ringo is his servant, I guess. I don't know. So Basil goes off on his horse, says he has to take care of his business, and he goes off to find Sage, who apparently he heard. So either they're very close to Basil, like his backyard, or Basil has a psychic connection with Sage, maybe from all those years of taking Black Orchid Serum. What do you think? We'll have to find out next week. Real American History. John Smith, founder of Virginia. The life of John Smith, founder of Virginia, is as interesting and thrilling as a story. When he was a boy in England, he learned a trade, but ran away. Like so many other runaway boys, he found the world a hard place. He went to sea, but was shipwrecked. On another occasion, he was thrown overboard, but swam ashore. He was once robbed of his money and had to beg to get back home. Not long after, he became a soldier and fought against the Turks. One day, a Turkish officer said he would fight any Christian single-handed to amuse the ladies. Young Smith took the man at his word. He killed the Turk and cut off his head. In another fight, he once killed three Turks. He was so proud of his deed, he tells us, that he had a picture of the men put on his flag. At last, he was captured by the Turks and sold as a slave. His owner was cruel and put an iron collar round his neck, but then set his prisoner to work threshing wheat, and in a fit of anger hit him over the head with the flail. The young Englishman killed his master, took a bag of wheat for food, jumped on a horse, and rode for his life into the forest. After many hardships, the young fellow got out of the country and reached his home in England. We may be sure that our hero found life at home pretty dull after his many narrow escapes and wonderful adventures in foreign countries. At this time, there was a good deal of talk in England about sending out a colony to settle Virginia. The restless and daring John Smith liked the idea. No better place for brave deeds and strange adventures could be found than in the wilds of the New World. He joined the company which was being formed and set sail for America. On reaching the coast of Virginia, the little fleet of three vessels sailed up a river. They named it the James River after King James of England. On its banks, they found a pleasant place to build their log cabins and called it Jamestown. Thus was laid, in the year 1607, the foundation of the first permanent settlement of English people in the New World. At first, the settlers had a hard time of it. They knew nothing about work. They were not used to laboring in the fields. They called themselves gentlemen. What did they care about cutting down trees and planting corn? They expected to pick up gold along the banks of the river. When the food they brought from England was gone, they came near starving. Many fell sick and died from lack of something to eat and proper shelter. Indeed, it is hard to see how the little settlement could have lived if it had not been for John Smith. He made the idle get to work. "If you don't work," he said, "you shall not eat." He showed the men how to cut down trees and build log huts. He sailed along the coast and made a map of it. With a few men, he went on trips up the rivers and traded with the Indians. If the red men were ugly and would not trade, he won their goodwill by giving them hatchets and colored beads. Many of the settlers grew tired of the hardships and begged to go back to England, but he coaxed them to stay. At first, the Indians were glad to see Captain Smith
and the pale-faced strangers. They treated them kindly and traded their corn for beads and trinkets, but pretty soon they began to think that the Englishmen wanted to rob them of their lands, so at last they would not give or sell their corn to the Jamestown settlement. Now Smith was shrewd as well as fearless. When his people were short of corn, he would set sail up the river in a small boat and go boldly among the savages. Before he came back, he would be sure to trade some little mirrors, blue beads, and trinkets for corn. Even if the Indians did not care to trade, he would in some way come back to the settlement with a boatload of food. On one of those trips, when he had others with him, the Indians attacked them and killed all of his men. He grabbed a redskin and by holding him as a shield, shot three of the savages. The place was swampy, however, and he could not get away. He was easily captured, but he was quick-witted. He took out his pocket compass and began to amuse the savages by telling them about its use. The Indians were sure that he belonged to another world and did not dare to kill him. On another trip, a young Indian was taken sick. Captain Smith, with a great show, wrote a few words on a piece of birch bark. "Let some brave take this to Jamestown, and my people will give him some medicine to make this boy well." Back came the Indian with the medicine. This is too much for them. They were afraid to do harm to a man who could make a piece of bark talk. It would fill a book much larger than this to tell you about the fearless deeds and narrow escapes of Captain John Smith. It is for us to remember that he was the founder of the first permanent English colony in the New World. Without his wise leadership, the settlement of Jamestown would never have lived, and this band of pioneers laid the first foundation stone of our nation.
If I record you?
It's up to you.
Okay.
To you. Pirates. There's a lot of pirates out here.
Yeah.
You got all my bands. And, let's see. What do you want to hear?
Whatever you want to play.
Let me see. It'll take about 5 seconds. Usually on recording time, I haven't recorded actually in a long time. So it's going to take about 10 seconds.
That's fine.
The next Red Line train to Braintree is now arriving.
Couple weeks ago, Johnny was talking about his reading books when he was in elementary school, and it got me to thinking about the reading books that I had to read, you know, when I was in, like, second grade. And second grade is the earliest time where I remember I had to do a report for Black History Month, and I guess that was 1972. And I guess that was probably one of the earliest times. I mean, Black History Month hadn't been around very, very long. I don't even know when it started, but it couldn't have started much, much earlier than 72 as a national holiday or national recognition. So
I had done my report on Marian Anderson for Black History Month and, you know, read all about her in the Encyclopedia Britannica and did my report. But I was thinking about that all those long years ago, that what if I had done my report on Billie Holiday? And so, as we go through time, past the drops in the ocean, this is what I think I would have done.
Glass, quiet down. Quiet down. And now, class, Kenneth will give his report on Billie Holiday for Black History Month. You may begin, Kenneth.
Thank you, Mrs. Yoakum. Billie Holiday, an American songstress. Billie Holiday was black. Billie Holiday had two names. Her first name was Eleonora Fagan. She was born on April 7, 1915, and she died on July 17, 1959. Billie Holiday was an American jazz singer. Billie Holiday manipulated wording and tempo. Billie Holiday popularized a personal and intimate approach to singing. Billie Holiday co-wrote three songs, God Bless the Child, Don't Explain, and Lady Sings the Blues. Billie Holiday had a difficult childhood. Billie Holiday was born in Baltimore. When Billie Holiday was 10 years old, she was raped. Then they put her in a reform school, the House of the Good Shepherd. Billie Holiday then moved to New York. She was raped again by Wilbert Rich, a neighbor. He was a bad man and went to jail for 3 months. Billie Holiday worked as a prostitute in a brothel in 1930. She got tired of that and started singing. Then she prostituted herself for record companies and talent agents. Billie Holiday was the first black woman to work with a white orchestra. In 1939, she learned Strange Fruit, a song about lynching. It reminded her of her father's death. Later, Billie told reporters that people would ask her to sing that sexy song about people swinging. She then knew that white people were stupid. She made one film, New Orleans, in 1947 with Louis Armstrong, another black American. In the 1940s, Billie Holiday used hard drugs, smack, black beauties, crank, cocaine, and smoked the Devil's Johnson. It hurt her health and she died. When she died, she was in police custody and had only 70 cents in her bank account, but she had $750 in her purse. The end. You can learn more about Billie Holiday at wikipedia.org for all your information needs.
Wasn't that informative and delightful? Thank you, Kenneth.
I hear music, mighty fine music, the murmur of the morning breeze up there, the rattle of the milkman on the stair. Sure, that's music, mighty fine music, the singing of the sparrow in the sky, the perking of the coffee right nearby. There's my favorite melody. You, my angel, phoning me. I hear music, mighty fine music, and anytime I think my world is wrong, I get me out of bed and sing this song.
Hello, how you doing? It's Kenty. Hope this works because I'm at lunch walking down the street in Harvard Square and the Phoenix is there. Hold on, cars are coming. I don't want to go there. So anyway, you know, I was working, I was had lunch the other day and I was sitting thinking about myself,
my favorite subject. No. On a philosophical level, you know, of course, we always think about ourselves and how we relate to that world. I mean, that's where we're coming from. I mean, to a certain degree, the sympathy for the plight of others, but, you know, we're basically concerned about ourselves. And Joe G. probably will agree with me because he's a sociologist. Actually, he's a social worker. But, you know, he's trained in social things. So, in psychology, he's a smart guy. So anyway, I was thinking about how I was reacting to meetings when I meet new people. And, you know, I'm out and about, so to speak, you know, in the world. I have picture of me and my partner in an embrace on my desktop at work, and you know, I don't hide anything. I don't hide in a closet. And though, you know, especially at work, and it doesn't, and this is not a reflection on any specific position I've had, it's all positions, is I take into consideration that I'm gay and how other people are going to react to that or treat me or not treat me, ignore me. For example, there is a training session I'm attending, and I, you know, meet these people, and I think to myself, I don't know these people from Adam. They could be dominionists. And, you know, they're going to have an opinion about gays, which are, you know, sort of to disenfranchise. The wind is blowing. I hope you can hear me. Disenfranchise the gays, you know, take away empowerment, because, as you know, many states have passed marriage laws saying that same-sex couples cannot get married. That is not true in Massachusetts nor California. And in New York, too, even though they don't have a law saying that gays can marry, they recognize out-of-state same-sex couple marriages. However, there is a... this is what my... Not my fear, but it's my trepidation. And, you know, I have to bear the cross every time I meet somebody new or am in the... at the mercy, so to speak, in a social setting. You know, I have to make that decision to be out. Actually, being out is not carrying the cross. That's not the burden. It's really not. It's only, it would be heavy if I were to, you know, be in the closet. You know, I am free. I am free to use religious, you know, whatever, images, words. It's a, but it's sort of like bearing a cross and also being free of the cross. It's a paradox, as they say, twisted paradox. Which reminds me, I saw a book the other day, Douglas Hofstadter, who wrote Girdle, Escherenbach. And that's not Girdle, but Girdle, the German guy, Girdle. And I read that, or tried to read it, when I was in college, and was fascinated by its logic and how astute it was. Well, he has a new book about the loops in our brains or something like that. And part of me was like, oh, I want to read it, but I didn't even read his first book all the way through. And in fact, I got rid of it out of my, when I moved, one of my times I moved, I was like, I thought to myself, do I really need this 600-page book, which I'll probably never read again? You know, but anyway, I digress. to avoid the pain of living in a society. Living in a society where I have to, I don't have to, and I choose not to. But being aware of that knife edge, you know, knowing that when I am open, there is a knife edge, there's the potential danger. So, and that's one reason why I think, you know, we should have gun rights, because I think all gays and lesbians and transgendered people should be armed to protect ourselves and to not take any shit, you know, from people. Because, you know, if gays are armed, right, you know, conceal it, make it a part of your fashion statement. You know, when you go out clubbing, leave room for a gun. Or a machine gun, perhaps. And so if you are you know, approached by, you know, people who mean to do you harm, then you can protect yourself. You know, it's not enough. Sometimes words aren't enough. And we need to take action to protect ourselves. You know, I think the gay community and what some people might say the liberal community lives by those sayings that, you know, turn the other cheek, part of Christianity. And to a certain extent, I believe that. I think that's true. I mean, you know, if you have an option to escape danger, then, of course, escape danger. But if you're confronted and you're in a corner, then you should be able to protect yourself by killing the threat, which is another human being in most cases, unless you're in the woods in Montana and are being circled by bears. Or in Africa and being circled by giraffes, rabid giraffes, and hyenas. But that should be an option to protect yourself. So it really annoys me. I'm getting into something else. It really annoys me when it's considered liberal to be anti-gun, because I'm liberal, but I'm pro-gun. And, you know, we paint ourselves in this corner like we're making a big deal, because Sarah Palin is a gun rights advocate or whatever and can skin a moose and whatever. Not today. Can skin a moose and can handle herself. And we call that conservative. And I think that issue should be taken off of the table as the being, whether it's, you shouldn't consider it being liberal or conservative. That's not a hallmark of either of those political ideologies, I believe. You know, it really annoys me sometimes what people consider liberals, because it's not what I consider liberal. It's like Democracy Now. I don't consider that liberal. In fact, I probably would consider Democracy Now to be more or less anarchic. And, you know, they're making this big deal about What's-Her-Face from Democracy Now! Being arrested in Minnesota for covering a story where I'm sure we just see part of that image, part of the... I'm looking at some books. We only see part of what was reported. We don't see what was happening before that. I mean, they could have been throwing sticks and stones at the police. It's like, you know, playing with a hornet's nest. And of course you're going to get stung, whether you're a press, the press or not. You can't be a cunt or a prick, okay? And Amy Goodman, I just don't necessarily trust Amy Goodman to give a balanced view of anything. I think she's she writes from an agenda, you know. Everything is colored a certain way to make it look like, it's like the right wing does the same thing. It just makes it look like that there's some big cover-up and conspiracies and stuff. I think the problem with America is that it's that we don't really care. And so it's easy to... It's like everything is really going fine, let's say, right? But then we have people who skew it for both sides, you know? It's really not as bad as either side says, whether the far right or the far leaning left. And you know, we can use left and right, but I don't think that we should make them synonymous with liberal or conservative, because I think they're different things. You know, if we're just saying left or right, that's non-ideological, I think. Is that right? Or maybe it's all ideological. Who knows? So I'm looking at some more books here. While I talk to you. But anyway, I'm always living on the edge of a knife. The King Must Die, a novel by Mary Renault. See, there's this book, there's these people who have a book, sell books in Harvard Square for $2 a piece. Oh, there's Saul Bellow, Revelstein. I should call Johnny and see if he wants that. Let me see if there's anything else. I'm going to call Johnny. And then I'm going to finish this up and go back. Calling Johnny. It's ringing. 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 I'm not going to buy it unless he wants it, because he has a lot to read. He left them. Okay. Well, he didn't answer his phone, so I'm not going to worry about this. Bye, Johnny. I'm going to hang up and continue on my way, because I have to get back in 10 minutes. So, what do you think, kids? Oh, I had an idea. How about this for an idea? And I think it would be really fascinating. Is to make two different podcasts, right? We call it the Channeled Podcast, which will be, it will seem like New Age. It will be the brand. And then the other podcast will be right-wing Christian fundamentalist, okay? However, each of the podcasts are going to say the same thing. And I would like to see how people react to what I say, you know? But I would need a large number of listeners. Of course, people who don't know me, because they, you know, I'm assuming that two different audiences are going to be listening to that, right? But wouldn't that be fascinating to see, you know? That'd be hard to do, because I'd have to take subjects which I can support with one with New Age teachings and one with the biblical teachings, but they have to be the same, right? Now, of course, some people out there who listen are listening to this, fundamentalist Christians, will be saying, I could tell the difference. I could tell that you're not really a fundamentalist Christian. And I could tell your podcast is an apostasy, and it's a sign of the revelation, because that's part of the gay agenda. Of course it's part of the gay agenda. So is Christian yoga. Actually, what I'm going to invent is Christian Muslim yoga, which is even more insidious than just regular Christian yoga, because we all know that when you put Muslim in front of everything, we're supposed to be immediately afraid. But I was listening the other day, what they say, it's like what they do, right? You could, okay, I could support everything I say with the Bible, and if a right-wing, one of these right-wing fundamentalist whack jobs, right, were to listen to me, they could refute it by saying, the devil has you. You're interpreting it with the devil's power. It's like they want to say one thing, that the Bible is the inerrant word of God and is the basis for all things logical and natural and supernatural. And on the other hand, when you use it, right, to support something that they don't believe, then you become the voice for the devil. You know? So, what that tells me is that they're not using the Bible as actually the basis of their belief, but something else outside of the Bible, which is totally against what they believe as fundamentalists. So, it's a illogical system. They think that they're using the Bible, right? But they really aren't using the Bible, because there is something else outside of the Bible which is defining their view of the Bible. Oh, look, there's a new store here. Where, right? Here, there's a new store. So I'm almost have to get back to work. I want to get a cup of water and take some amino acids and a vitamin. So, on that note, kids, I'm going to let you go. Bye.
Another 5-minute mystery.
Darling, it's been such a lovely afternoon here on the mountain.
Martha, I want a divorce.
Divorce?
Yes, there is someone else. I need my freedom.
No, I won't give it to you.
I thought that would be your answer, my dear.
And why did you ask me?
Because, Martha, I did not want to kill you.
Howard?
Yes, Martha. I've got to be rid of you. That's why I brought you to the mountain. There is a precipice over there. It is a long fall, my dear.
I might as well begin with a description of the events leading up to your wife's falling over the precipice.
As you wish, Sergeant. It was such a lovely afternoon that Martha, my wife, and I decided to come up here to the mountain. We brought some lunch with us and planned to make a day of it.
About what time was that, sir?
I should say it was about 3 o'clock.
I see. Would you go on, please?
About 4 o'clock, it began to thunder, and very shortly thereafter, lightning and rain started.
Did you find shelter?
Yes, we were rather fortunate to find a cave about 100 yards from here, on the west side of the mountain.
What time did it stop raining?
About an hour later, Sergeant.
What did you do then?
This is quite a lot of questioning, Sergeant. Is it all necessary?
Yes, I'm afraid it is. I hope you don't object. We're almost through.
No, not if it is necessary. Well, to continue. We left the cave and continued to the crest of the mountain. As we got to the top, my wife called my attention to a rainbow, which had suddenly appeared to the west behind the sun.
And that was about 5 o'clock.
Yes. Well, when Martha saw the rainbow, she suggested, as a sort of joke, that we try to follow to the end of the rainbow. You know the pot of gold at the rainbow's end?
Yes, of course. What happened after she suggested it?
I laughed and tried to dissuade Martha from the idea, but she began running down the incline and waving for me to follow her.
Did you?
No, I shouted for her to turn back, but she was running downhill too quickly to stop. Suddenly, she slipped on some loose rock and fell down. She turned over and over and rolled right off the precipice. It was horrible.
There was no way you could have helped her?
Of course not. Are you insinuating...
No, my mountain climbing friend. I'm merely saying that I don't believe your story. It's a lie.
How does the state policeman know that Howard lied in the story of how his wife met her death? In just a moment, we'll know, but first...
Oh, what a beautiful day for Frankenberry, the world's super sweet new cereal.
Phooey! Here's the world's super sweet new cereal, Count Chocula.
Bertle, I've got berry-flavored sweeties for monstrous strawberry flavor.
Well, I've got chocolate sweeties for monstrous chocolate flavor.
Frankenberry, Count Chocula.
Meow.
Frankenberry, Count Chocula.
And now, back to our story.
Howard, your story contained one rather obvious flaw which condemns it as a lie. You told me just a few minutes ago that after the storm cleared, you and your wife discovered a rainbow to the west, behind the sun, which, my friend, is an impossibility. A rainbow is always formed opposite the sun by the reflection of its rays.
Sea Fever by John Masefield. I must go down to the seas again, to the lonely sea and the sky, and all I ask is a tall ship and a star to steer her by. And the wheels kick, and the wind song, and the white sails shaking, and a gray mist on the sea's face, and a gray dawn breaking. I must go down to the seas again, for the call of the running tide is a wild call and a clear call that may not be denied. And all I ask is a windy day with the white clouds flying and the flung spray and the blown spume and the seagulls crying. I must go down to the seas again, to the vagrant gypsy life, to the gull's way and the whale's way where the wind's like a whetted knife. And all I ask is a merry yarn from a laughing fellow rover, and a quiet sleep, and a sweet dream when the long trick's over.
You've been listening to The Flatus Show. You can reach me at flatusshow@gmail.com or come by and visit my website at theflatusshow.com. Thank you for listening.
Later, Billy told reporters that people would ask her to sing that sexy song about people swinging. She then knew that white people were stupid.
Southern trees, they're strange fruit. Blood on the leaves. And blood at the root. Black bodies swinging in the southern breeze. Strange fruit hanging from the poplar trees. pastoral scene of the gallant South. The bulging eyes and the twisted mouth, scent of magnolia, sweet and fresh. Then the sudden smell of burning flesh. Here is a fruit for the crows to pluck, for the rain to gather, for the wind to suck, for the sun to rock, for the tree to drop. Here is a strange and bitter cry.